Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
7:08 and change. Ron Shera is in studio with us for Live Outdoors. Normally, I start the conversation by saying, how did it go this weekend? How'd you catch him? But I already know because yesterday during our wildly popular Sunday morning show, I had amongst my guests with Sid Hartman and Dave Mona, Bruce Boudreau. And of all things, Bruce shared a boat with Ron on Saturday as part of a wild fundraiser. And so I was with anxious anticipation that I was able to bring Bruce into the show. And I figured what an experience it had to be for him to get to fish with a pro like Ron. And who knows, their biggest concern probably was to be over their limit. So I worried about that a little bit for Bruce, and I knew that he'd catch more fish than he ever knew existed in that lake.
Yeah.
And then I brought him into the conversation, and I found out it just wasn't to be.
Well, first off, I had to keep him awake. You know, that's part of the problem.
I was just so disappointed. I thought him going with you.
You're disappointed.
They wanted to give him the ultimate experience, the coach, you know?
Yeah, that's why we started out there. It was an ultimate experience, okay. we had a great time. He's a great trooper. You know, fishing for him is about as popular as his own hanging might be.
He said patience is not his greatest virtue.
I know, but surprisingly, he was more than patient, and sadly for him, the areas that I had where some smallmouth located turned out Saturday morning to be in the teeth of the wind, and so we were...
Oh, good fisherman adjust, though.
I know, yeah, we were adjusting all right. We were bouncing around. He was suggesting we would go adjust by going back into the bar
or giving a hamburger?
Yeah, right. And I was teasing him. I said...
I was trying to think. It was pretty warm, wasn't it?
It was okay.
It was pleasant?
Yeah, it was pleasant. We've got a wind coming across the lake there like that.
It wasn't like today, yeah.
No. That was a great experience, and we raised a lot of money for the Minnesota Wild Foundation, and lots of players were there. And I didn't want to brag this up, but you brought up, started to question my fishing integrity. So they had a live auction there, my friend.
Yeah. Wait, now this is after?
This is after the...
But we go back. I didn't hear how many you brought it in the boat for that because they have the big weigh-in. And did you, when you got there, did you think, I mean, obviously, I'm sure you had a whole bunch of fish. Did you think, oh, we've won it for sure? What happened?
Well, we had a whole bunch of fish. I think there was one of them in there.
They're counting sunfish too, huh?
Well, walleyes. I caught a walleye. I had to let it go, of course. You know, my biggest fear was coming in skunked. Well, I avoided that one.
Just barely,
I got a nice, not barely, I got a nice smallmouth, and that was Saturday. But Friday night now, they had this big party for the players and some of the VIPs, et cetera, and they had a live auction raising money for the Wild Foundation. And so one of the auction items was old Ron here with half a day fishing trip, and so with a very funny auctioneer, he started out at $10,000. To my surprise, nobody raised their hand. But anyway, so you can take the smirk off your face because the final tally was like $3,700.
You gotta be kidding me.
Would I? I don't kid you.
You're gonna pay $3,700 to fish with yourself?
I'm not. Yeah, right. Yeah, I walked up to the guy afterwards. I said, "Man, you're crazy. You're crazy." He said it was a good cause. He had a few bucks in his pocket. So Very funny. But anyway, yeah.
Well, I wonder the next night if he had known how poorly you did fishing, what he would have been.
You know, we said, here's a chance to listen free to Mike Max on his Sports to the Max
and
show.
They passed on
and
it?
Nobody bid anything.
Couldn't even get an opening bid on that.
Right, exactly.
So who's the guy that's going with you?
That bought that?
Yeah.
You know, I don't have his name to memory, but I talked to him several times, and I think he wants to bring his young daughters who are, I mean, like 6 and 8, something okay. like that, which makes it very difficult. But
at least you have a chance to catch a fish.
Certainly then. Wouldn't discourage him from bringing his daughters out. But I think I said, well, maybe we better find some bluegills to catch. So we're going to try that. I think we don't have a date yet set, but
there so you it was go. A good time overall.
Yeah, good time. I would say so. A lot of the players, like you and I were talking off the air, get to talk to my grandson Jake. He was in seventh heaven because he's a big hockey fan. He knew all the players more so than I did. But we had Jason Zucker was there. We had him on the radio here last week. So he's a good sport. And Spurgeon is his name?
Yeah, Jared Spurgeon, good guy.
Good guy.
Little guy, boy. You wouldn't say, boy, there's a pro athlete, would you?
Yeah, he's about 5'8". You know, I came up to him.
You'd take a peanut shell off his head, you know.
I came up to him. I said, you know, buddy, if I met you on the ice, I'd just sweep you aside.
Yeah.
He says, I have a stick too, you know.
And I know how to use it.
Yeah.
And you've heard stick it. You've heard that term before.
I don't know, but he could probably push me into the boards pretty easily. He's fast too. But anyway, it was a good time. And the coach was a good, a good guy as well, even though fishing is not his thing. They played some golf there.
Did they?
Izetti's put on a wonderful food and so,
did you tell him some jokes? Did he tell you some jokes?
We had some Ole and Lena jokes, none of which I can repeat here. But
you heard the one about Sven and Ole when they went fishing in Canada, didn't you?
I think you've said it before.
No,
but
I don't think I have, because I just heard about this. They just got back from Canada.
Yeah?
And Sven says to Ole, he says, can you believe it? We went all the way to Canada. He's got pen and pencil now in hand and a piece of paper, and he says, and we caught just one fish. He says, think about that. We spent $2,000 for 2 pounds of fish. Ole says it was a lucky thing we didn't catch two fish. We'd be out $4,000.
Oh.
I wish I'd have given you that one before went.
I wish you would have too.
Take a break, come back. Ron's back. Yes, when Ron Shearer's in, we play this song.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
The ultimate crooner, Ron Shearer. God, I wish I'd remembered it.
You got me.
I wrote down the name. He said, I know this guy that used to be in a band and sing with Ron Shearer.
Really?
And I wrote the name down, and I swore I'd bring it in, and I keep forgetting to bring it in.
Well, those were the days when I was on the edge of stardom.
Yeah. Huh? And you said, well, I can do this or right outdoors, and you said right outdoors.
Yeah. I don't know how close I was to the edge of stardom.
The edge of something.
Edge of something, yeah. The edge of falling off, maybe.
Yes. But yeah. You'd stay out late at night back in those days, huh?
Well, I could. I can't now.
You can't now. You just fall asleep.
That's why I turned into a grouse hunter, my friend, a grouse hunter. And you know what? We got good news the other day on Minnesota's DNR grouse
survey. The cycle is right, huh?
I guess so. Ted Dick is joining us for the DNR Forest Game Bird. He's
Ted
the
has seen
game
a few
bird
of these
coordinator, huh?
Seasons come and go.
He has. Ted, welcome.
Hello. Thank you. How are you?
Well, we're pretty good. We're just, you know, making jokes here left and right. We're quite the comedy team.
Mm-hmm.
But Ted,
you can joke all you want. I'm spending my evening at my new happy place at the Surly Brewing Company with a Rough Grouse Society event tonight.
Whoa, that sounds like a pretty good combination.
Yeah, it's better. You know, when we work with the DNR, we do our stakeholder meetings and we have them in a town hall or something, but these guys know how to do it. They have it at Surly Brewing, so
they know
everybody's in a much better mood when they want to criticize.
You got it figured out.
Well, Ted, just to bring folks up to date who haven't heard, what do the spring drumming counts show in Minnesota for rough grouse?
Well, very good news. They're up 57% year over year. So I looked back at some of the graphs I have in my office, and I think that's the biggest year-over-year increase since at least 1980, if not quite a bit further than that. So it's a big jump, and typically that bodes well for the hunting in the fall. So
how do you explain that sudden increase?
Well, first I'd like to examine the tapes from last year when I talked to you guys. I think someone was giving me a little bit of needling for being overly optimistic the year before. And last year, the drumming counts were up 17%, and then when we measured some hunters in Grand Rapids, that's exactly what the harvest went up in the fall. So,
Ron loves to needle, though.
You know, the drumming counts, I'm not the guy to ask. I think I told a reporter earlier this year that this winter could have been bad with the low snow and the precipitation events. You know, if you paint the ground white but don't have a lot of place for a grouse to hide, that's typically bad. But that, I know nothing because it shot up. There was obviously very good overwinter survival. So.
Yeah, of course, there's still the snake in the grass here from the standpoint of what the hatch may have been.
Right.
We don't know that.
Yeah, we always say it's a two-pronged sort of thing coming out of the spring. If you have good drumming survey increases, that's a positive. But potentially even more important thing is the brood rearing conditions in June. And from the places I've been and the people I've talked to, it usually cold and wet is the thing that can most likely affect a brood of grouse chicks. But we didn't really have cold. We had some wet in parts of the state. The people in the Northeast tell me they had some pretty big rain events. But where I live in Grand Rapids and the stuff around there, I think we made it through the critical period okay. I think it was pretty decent. You like to have some rain just to produce more vegetation and more insects for the young birds to eat. So I think we came through that all right, too. But still remains to be seen. But so far, so good.
Well, Ted, the bird is famous for roughly 10-year population cycle of high and low, and I think this goes right along with that, if I remember correctly. Have we come close to figuring out what causes or inspires this cycle?
You know, I don't think we have. There's some academics in Wisconsin that are doing some advanced modeling. A lot of species in the northern boreal forest can cycle up and down over time in sort of a repeatable fashion. But with the grouse, I mean, people have been studying it for years. You know, they've looked at avian predators, they've looked at changes in food, and it's something you'd be a hero in the wildlife world if you could pin it down and come up with a theory that explains it every year. But so far, nobody's been able to do it, and people a lot smarter than me have been working on it.
Yeah, I remember who was the famous grouse researcher,
Gordon Gullion. Yep.
Yeah, he even looked at red phase versus gray phase and stuff like that. But he went to his death without finally solving that issue. But
he's still never had it figured out. He looked at some responses. Their main prey item a lot of the time, or their main forage item, I should say, they do well in aspen habitats. And he was looking at potential chemical changes in the composition of the buds and the forage, you know, would maybe sort of be in a response to more foraging by the grouse. But no, it's never been figured out yet.
You know,
it's nice that we have those mysteries.
Yeah,
it is.
You know, Ted, I'll never forget. I walked the woods with him one time in the wintertime and also the different summer. But in the winter, I said to him one day, I said, you know, I've never really seen what I know to be a drumming log. Mm-hmm. And he looked around the woods there. He says, well, over here, he says, it looks like this could be a drumming log over here. And then he said, if it is a drumming log, he said, the bird will be drumming on this end of it. I go, oh, how do you know that? Well, he said, so he brushed the snow away, and there on the log was all these old dried droppings of the grouse. I go, wow.
People have put that much, research and things in all aspects of a lot of game birds like that. And so the fact that we still haven't figured out the cycle is kind of interesting. But my coworker with the Rough Grouse Society, Meadow Caulfield, she has a master's degree in rough grouse drumming, so she can talk to you for a long time about the characteristics of a drumming log or what makes a good one or which ones get reused, because she measured a lot of them.
Have you ever seen Ron go drumming on a log? It's pretty interesting and fun. Usually happens about 11 o'clock at night after we've been around the campfire for a couple hours.
Yeah, well, if he was doing that this spring, that might have been one of the things that caused the dress.
That could be throwing him for a loop.
You see, yeah. Well, I beat my chest after I'm done doing radio with Mike Max.
Yep, I've seen you up at the Anchorage in Longville. Drumming on a log right after one of those.
Well, I think we're running out of time here, a tad real fast.
Yep, smart move.
Well, listen, we're going to conclude with your promise again to direct me to the highest densities of rough grouse that you've found in the Grand Rapids area. And I'm still holding you to that.
I'd be happy to do it, but fortunately I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid enough to do it on worldwide radio. I promise to give you a decent tip because you deserve it. So.
Well, Ted, thank you for joining us tonight and that info.
Thanks, Ted.
Good to talk to you again. Appreciate it. Call back anytime.
You bet. Ted Dick at Surly's Bar and Grill, huh?
You know, I went there for the first time. This was speaking to a conservation group, and I had never been there. And so we're driving down there, and I said to my wife, I said, I wonder if anybody's going to be there. I mean, you know. And then we came around the corner, and Surly's, it looked like the parking lot for the Vikings game.
Really?
Oh, my Lord.
I've never been there. I don't even. Where is it?
Well, it's down near the University of Minnesota campus.
Okay.
I'm not a beer drinker, but my Lord, a heck of a lot of people are.
Yeah, somebody is, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Plenty more to come. Tell them who else we got out tonight, Ron.
Oh, well, we're going to talk to the guy who has been appointed to take a look at Mille Lacs from an outsider's viewpoint, to talk to the local folks, get their viewpoint, and come up with his own idea of what needs to be done or not done to revive the walleye situation on Mille Lacs. And his name is Chris Vandergoot, and we will talk to him right after the break.
Ron Shearer, Live Outdoors on WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
7:35 and change. Last week I was not in. I did the noon to 3 show that day, and then Ron was in Steve Thompson last week. And so you can imagine my surprise when I got to the Little League Park at about 7:30, and I got out of the car in the parking lot, and somebody looks at me and says, "Hey, Maxie, Ron Shearer sure teed you up tonight."
It's the only chance I have when you're gone.
They said he had his A game tonight, and I said, "Well, what does that mean?" I said, "I didn't know he had one."
Well, see, you just hang around, but I can't do you justice when you're here because you always interrupt me. So.
Somebody asked too.
I know. Hey, we have a very special guest here, Maxie, tonight. Because, you know, we all know about that issue on Mille Lacs.
Yeah.
And so in a little bit here, we're going to talk to Chris Vandergoot, who is a biologist for Lake Erie, and find out, I don't know how he was appointed or named or asked. I talked to him today. This is an unpaying job. He's just doing it because he used to live in Minnesota, but he's going to be kind of an independent investigator, so to speak. He's
okay.
Going to talk to the locals up there, but we'll get more details.
Okay,
from
just
him.
Tell me, though, when you were up here these last couple of days last week, you're fishing for bass, obviously, so you don't get the true feel, but did you get any kind of feel for the walleye population or talking to the folk and everything else?
Well, nothing that's really changed. I saw two dead walleyes floating. That's one thing, but I don't know what that means necessarily. The lake is empty.
Yeah. Not many boats out there.
Except for bass fishermen.
Isn't that something? It's surreal, isn't it, to look on that lake and you see this long, almost like an ocean, depending on your view, and you might see one boat off in the distance and that's it.
Yeah, there's
what
no,
a waste, you know?
Nothing going on out there for walleye fishing. That's because of the rules of DNR. I did see a guy trolling with boards, and I thought, well, maybe he was trolling with a crankbait. You could say you were trolling for anything there and maybe catch walleyes, but somebody said, oh, he was probably trolling for muskies. So that made sense, too. Otherwise, it's a painful thing to look at.
Painful thing to look at. And, it's like a dead sea looking at a dead sea, you know?
Very, very few answers, at least that I have.
How about the people that have cabins on the lake? Are there a lot of people out? Are they recreating? Are they swimming? Are they at least jet skiing, things like that on that lake?
I saw some of that, but it depends on the mood of the lake.
Especially Mille Lacs.
Yeah, so if you're in the right side for the wind, you can do that. If you're not, you're not. But we were at Isades for this Minnesota Wild event and went very well there. But Isades put on a nice service and food, et cetera. But they're kind of a golf resort.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Did you play golf?
Me? No. Not when I got my boat, man. You know, I have enough trouble catching a fish, let alone hitting a golf ball.
Why do two things poorly in the same weekend?
Exactly.
Take a break, come back. Ron Shero, Live Outdoors.
Thank you very little.
This song dedicated to Ron Shero. The girl that left him at the altar back in college.
There were many
high
of
school.
Them.
High school. Yeah. Both. Prom.
There were many of them.
Welcome back, Live Outdoors. Tell us about our next special guest.
Well, Maxie, special indeed, and I'm interested to hear what he has to say about what he hopes to accomplish here in Minnesota. But we're going to talk to Chris Vandergoot. Used to live in Minnesota, I found out today, but he's a research biologist for the Lake Erie area, and he's been asked to come to Minnesota and look at the situation in Mille Lacs, talk to local folks, talk to whoever he wants to talk to, I believe, and kind of reach his own conclusions about what we're doing right or wrong up here as far as walleyes and Mille Lacs. So, Chris, thanks for joining us this evening.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Well, explain to me, Chris, how did this happen that you, a former Minnesota guy, at least you spent some time here, how was it that you were chosen to maybe help solve this ongoing issue we have here in Mille Lacs?
Well, I worked up in Minnesota in the Walker area for about a year, and then I took a position with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources on Lake Erie. And in that role, I was charged with conducting population surveys on Lake Erie on the walleye population, and then also providing management recommendations of harvest levels and just assessing the overall health of the stock for sustainable use into the future. So I was a biologist there for about 12 years. I was a supervisor in the office there for 2 years, and then most recently I've transitioned to the federal system working for the Lake Erie Biological Station under USGS. Still in Sandusky and still working on Lake Erie issues and conducting research.
Well, who reached out to you? Was it our DNR here said, come on over?
Yeah, absolutely. Every year, the Great Lakes Fishery Commission has an annual meeting, and I had presented some research and what I was involved with. And Don Pereira, the fisheries chief for Minnesota DNR, said, hey, Chris, we've got this going on Mille Lacs, and we're hoping to bring in some outside folks to take a look at what we're doing, you know, possibly provide some insight into our management strategy and see if there are any deficiencies, or, you know, let us know what the strengths of the program are. So after thinking about it a little bit, I agreed to, and I should also clarify that it's not going to be just me. It's going to be myself along with other fisheries scientists throughout North America who are accustomed to working on large fisheries, particularly walleye fisheries, undertaking this assessment and review.
When are you starting your task here?
So at the end of the month, I'll be traveling up there to Minnesota to interact with the the Mille Lacs Lake Advisory Group, and then also sitting in with the Fisheries Technical Committee and hearing about the current assessment programs going on Mille Lacs.
Now, Chris, some people hearing that are going to say, oh, yeah, well, the DNR reached out to him, and he's just going to parrot everything that they've
been
saying.
Yeah, rubber stamp it, yeah.
How would you answer that?
Well, I mean, that's understandable, and I mean, if people, again, working on Lake Erie, I've had a lot of experience, and, you know, people who are cynical are going to be cynical about it, and I get that. I think the comfort is that it's not going to be just me. It's going to be myself along with other fisheries biologists throughout North America who work on a variety of different systems. You know, this is not anything we're being compensated for. We're working on these issues, you know, during time that we might have, you know, to help another agency in the management of their fishery.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's several issues, that some people say, or DNR says, the bait levels or perch levels are down. You probably examine that. Some others look at the netting going on and wonder just how controlled that gill netting of spring walleyes is, and others are questioning DNR's own population surveys, so thinking there are more walleyes in the lake than what their surveys are showing. I mean, you've got plenty to work on there, Chris.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And you know what it is? It's a systematic approach. I mean, you start with the assessment surveys. You take a look at those. You take a look at changes in the ecosystem. I mean, all these ecosystems and lakes are dynamic. They change from year to year. Not even a farm pond, you know, which is a small system, is the same from year to year. And then you look at the things that you mentioned, the debits to the population, you know, the different fisheries that are occurring on the lake, whether or not the DNR is, you know, accounting for those adequately through different surveys. I mean, you put all of these pieces together, and you form the best guess or the best educated insight into what's going on.
What's the greatest telltale sign, if like in the case of Mille Lacs, is the walleye are coming back? Is it simply trying to net and find numbers? Is it the food sources that they have available? Or is it other species of fish that have a similar diet that are thriving? What do you look for first?
Well, I mean, you always look for population trends. You know, are there old fish in the population? Are there young fish in the population? You know, what is survival? What are forage What are forage populations like? In Lake Erie, we exhibit high fluctuations in forage abundance from year to year. So walleye will switch from a preferred forage species like emerald shiner and gizzard shad. In low years, they may switch to something like white perch, which is certainly not preferred, but it's another forage. So you start to look for those type of things of how is the population reacting from year to year. And I mean, and you put all the pieces together. You just have to start putting all the pieces together. You look at mortality, you look at survival, you look at recruitment, you look at harvest, exploitation. You know, are the exploitation rates higher than, you know, most populations can withstand?
Our guest this evening is Chris Vandergoot, who will be joining, coming to Minnesota, I should say, from Lake Erie. He's a walleye expert there to take a look at. I guess I would describe it as a mess up there, Chris. But I'm curious, you've had zebra mussels in Lake Erie for decades. Zebra mussels are relatively new to Mille Lacs, but they've been blamed for a lot of things already. What are you seeing in Erie with in regards to zebra mussels?
Well, they're definitely a game changer. You know, when they first came here, everybody was running around, you know, the sky is going to fall. And in fact, there were some pretty large changes that occurred early on. But then, as you know, all ecosystems do, they reach some type of equilibrium. So what zebra mussels really did on Lake Erie, as they do in any system, they cleared up the water. Well, coinciding with the clearing up of water, fisheries tactics changed. Guys went from predominantly casting for walleye, which, you know, with an Erie Deary or some of those, you know, traditional lures, to guys started trolling more because they needed to cover more water. Walleye were a little bit more elusive, and so the fishery changed, catchability changed in the surveys, and those are things that had to be accounted for in the assessments. So they're a big game changer, more than people really really would think. I mean, again, walleye have a very sensitive eye to light, and so if the water's clearing up, you can only imagine that's going to change the way they react to fisheries, assessments, and so on and so forth.
Well, indeed, we're going to look forward to your input here, and I assume there'll be some final report someday. And I'll just congratulate you ahead of time for solving the issue, okay?
Well, I appreciate you have that much confidence in me.
We tried doing it initially with Ron just fishing it for walleye, and according to that, there were no walleye in the lake, so we had to go to another plan.
Yeah, I guess in these situations, you're either the hero or the zero, so I guess time will tell.
Thank you for taking it on.
You're welcome.
Chris Vandergoot, a lot of studying to go on there. The Maplewood Toyota time is 7:51. You just picture Ron sitting on a train, going somewhere, singing a little bit in his boxcar by himself.
I don't have a radio in my boat.
You don't?
No, I can't. I can't listen to music because, you know, I'm very musically inclined.
What about my show? You must not fish at night, because otherwise you'd have to have one to listen to this show.
Well, I know, but I can't have a radio is a distraction for me when I'm fishing. You have to concentrate. Now, my daughters hate that, but I said, listen. You know, you got to listen for the bass. If you can see a surface lure or something over here, you never hear it if you're listening to some.
I'm surprised, though, that you haven't had more success fishing with all that, all the great lengths that you go to.
Clearly. Now, do you want me to bring up your one duck you shot 5 years ago?
It was a pretty duck.
That sure was
have
a pretty
I ever shown
duck.
You the picture here? Where's my phone?
Yeah.
I'll show you the picture.
No, you showed it to me. Speaking of ducks, I feel bad for you because you're going to have an even worse duck season this year because DNR just announced that the duck population and the breeding population in Minnesota declined this summer, and about like 15% or more, don't quote me. But the goose population increased.
Yeah.
Sad about the ducks. And I'm,
yeah.
Dennis Anderson wrote quite a column about it the other day. He just feels their duck regulations limits are too liberal. Here's some evidence that the liberal hunting is when it started. Basically, what some of the duck managers said is it doesn't matter how many ducks you shoot. It's some other things involved. Well, he disagrees with that. Anyway,
it's a tough one to figure, though, isn't it?
Well, it is, but Fish and Wildlife Service, I do believe, if they don't spend as much time on ducks as they used to way back when, and don't know why, but maybe, government prerogatives or budget means some other things, so...
Bud Grant has a theory that you don't see as many crows or songbirds when you're out there. And he says one of the problems is they can only do studies on so many different things. And he says, I will swear to you in all my hunting that you don't see as many crows or songbirds as you used to. But who's doing studies on it? Well, nobody really, because it's not a game bird.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if it's true. And sometimes our perception is...
Right, depending on where you are, right?
Yeah, for sure. But so it's bad news for you.
Where are you
ducks.
Going this week?
Well, I've got to do some charity fishing. I'm going to take a couple out Wednesday to a local Metro Lake here and see if...
How much did that cost you?
Huh? No, they're... you of all people should doubt and question, what people pay to go fishing with me. No, actually, the money doesn't go into my pocket, just so you know that, buddy.
I didn't, buddy.
Unlike you, the money goes into charity.
You said it, I didn't. Why would you do it then?
It goes into charity. Unlike you, you speak for 10 minutes and you want $10,000. So
hey, don't
go.
Be lowballing me again.
I'm out of here, buddy.
Ron Sharon next week. Again.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.